We're going to start the Mishnah on the top of Nun Aleph and Aleph. Mishnah begins, Lo chiso mi b'od yom, lo yichasena mishtech shach. He did not cover it before Shabbat started, then he may not cover it on Shabbat itself. Kiso v'nitgale, if he covered it already, and then it was exposed, mutar de chasuto, then he is allowed to cover it. Memalei et ha-kaiton, he's allowed to fill up a pitcher of water, v'notein l'tachet ha-kar or l'tachet ha-kesed, to put under the pillow or under the mattress. So in terms of the first part of the Mishnah, we're talking about Hatmana here, and we know that you're not allowed to start to do the process of Hatmana, you're not allowed to be matmin on Shabbat itself. We've seen that. So here, the process has to be done beforehand, and therefore if he was not matmin b'od yom, he didn't cover it while it was still daytime, then he's not permitted to do that at night, because that's what we call tchilat hatmana, the beginning of hatmana process, which must be done prior to the Shabbat. On the other hand, if he already covered it, and then it is exposed, Tosafot says here, even if it's exposed on Erev Shabbat, and if you covered on Erev Shabbat, and for some reason it opened up, that's okay to replace on Shabbat, because you're not starting the hatmana then. You had done the hatmana already, and then it somehow got moved or exposed, and so because of that, you're allowed to continue on Shabbat, what we call Mosif al-Hatmana. You're allowed to add, we'll see that in today's daf, but you're allowed to add on to the Hatmana, you're not allowed to start the Hatmana. So as long as it doesn't look like you're starting the Hatmana, we're okay with you covering it up. So then, for sure, everybody agrees, based on the Mishnah, that if it got exposed or you opened it on Shabbat, that you'd be able to replace the questions on Erev Shabbat if it gets opened up. Tosafot is Mechadesh here, that even if it got opened up on Erev Shabbat, and it went into Shabbat uncovered, but because when you put it in, you covered it, and unbeknownst to you, or for whatever reason, it uncovered, that's okay, and then you can replace it on Shabbat. Other Rishonim believe that if it got exposed on Erev Shabbat, you cannot replace it. It has to go into Shabbat, behatmana, in order for you to then expose it and recover it on Shabbat. The latter half of the Mishnah deals with hatmana for cold items. We're talking about cold water there, and you want to maintain or insulate the item so the cold stays in the water. So you put it into the kar or the keset, you put it into a pillow under a mattress to protect it from the heat. So that, the Mishnah says, is permissible, and that leads us to the first line of the Gemara, which is, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mutar lahatmin et hatzunein. One is permitted to hatmana with cold water. The reason being is because, the Gemara is going to say in one second, we don't have any problem inherently with hatmana and cold water. There's no cooking, there's none of the fears that you have by hatmana by hot items. Our only fear is that if it's so similar to the hatmana of hot items, then if we allow it to do with cold items, you're also going to do it with hot items. And that is Amar Rav Yosef, Maika Mashmalon. What is he coming to teach us? Tanina, we already saw it in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that explicitly, Memalei Adam Kaiton, you can fill up a pitcher of cold water and put it under the pillow, under the mattress. He's really teaching us a lot here. Had I only had the Mishnah, it's only true with something that you normally don't do atmana with. Something that you normally do atmana with, no, that would not be the case. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel adds for us a dimension to the atmana of cold, that not only is it true about items that are not normally done with atmana, but even true with items that you normally do atmana with, as long as it's cold, it's fine. Rashi, in formulating the subject of that sentence, changes in the midway, which is somewhat difficult, because it says, what is normal to do atmana with? What's not normal to do with atmana with? What is he referencing? Are you referencing the insulation, or are you referencing the item that you're putting into the atmana? In the first case, Rashi says, Rashi, the first says it's the insulation that is the unusual side of it, which is using a pillow and a mattress, you don't use that for insulation, for heat. You only use that for cold. And therefore, that's what makes it unusual. And that's why the Mishnah is only talking about a case that is not common, a case where it doesn't have a relationship with heating insulation, because it's not the type of insulation you'll use. But then Rashi says in the second statement of the Gemara is that something that is darkol atmin, something that's normally put into atmana, then you would have thought, no, that's what Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel comes to teach you, that even that you're allowed to do. There Rashi describes it as the tafshil. It's something that's cooked. That type of item, something that's in a pot that's cooked, that's normally put by atmana. So then Rashi almost jumps rails. He starts with talking about the insulation and then he jumps to the object itself. Is that normally put in atmana when you have hot? So Rashi gives you both sides then, but it's switching the subject between the two Rashis. So it could be true in either case. It could be true of the insulation, or it could be true of the item itself. If it's insulation that you normally don't use by hot items, that would have been a havamina by the Mishnah. Along comes Ravidom Shmuel, says even in with insulation that you normally use by hot items, you're allowed to do it. Or it could be the other way around. For objects or items that you normally wouldn't put into Atmana when they're hot, then that's what the Mishnah addresses. But Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel comes along and says that even with objects or items like a tavshil, a pot full of food, that normally you would put into hot, then that is still allowed. So it could be referencing either the insulation or the item itself. Either way, the chiddush is that not only do we do it in an uncommon occurrence or in not something that connects to the heating part of hatmana, but even with cold hatmana, we allow you to do this, even if it looks similar to hot hatmana. Amar Bahuna. So now the gears that they change here is to Amar Rabbi, which is interesting in itself, because it would make a lot more sense if it was Amar Avuna, Amar Rav. So Avuna being a Talmud of Rav, so it would make a lot more sense. Very unlikely that Avuna was quoting from Rabbi himself. But nevertheless, because of the continuation of the Gemara, it seems like Rabbi was quoted here. I don't think it's Mukhrach, but that's what it seems like. And therefore, Amar Avuna, Amar Rabbi, Asur Latmina Tatzonein. He is against that position of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that you're allowed to do Atman of its own name. He says you're not allowed to do it. Va'atanya, don't we have a brighter Rabbi Hitir lahatmin et its own name? Rabbi said you're allowed to do Atman of its own name. So the reason that they moved the Girsa to Rabbi is because it sounds like the Gemara is asking a stira in Rabbi's position. It sounds like Rabbi said no Atmana, and now we have a brighter that says yes Atmana. Sounds like it's a steer and Rebbe from the Gemara. Again, you could read it another way to force it. You have a Tana who says, yes, Atmana, and you are an Amora who's saying no Atmana by gold, so you have to reconcile then. But nevertheless, based on that, they assume that the Girsa is Rabbi. Lokasho, the Gemara says, that's not a problem. Ha, mikamei, tilishmai mi Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. That's before he heard the Alocha from Mishmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. Ala bat tilishmai, and this is after he heard it. What is, did he hear? Tiato, kiha diyotiv Rabbi. Rabbi was sitting, v'amar asur latmin et atzonein. That was his original position, which is that you may not do atmana with cold items. Amar lafanav Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, Abba being my father, Rabbi Yossi, hitir latmin et atzonein. He said it was mutar. Amar kvar hore zakein. He already gave the psak alocha. We're going to follow his psak alocha. Amar avapa bure kama mechavavim zedzeh. See how genteel and respectful they were to each other. How they gave kavod or gave credence to the other person's position over here. Shila Rabbi Yossi kayam haya kafuf v'yoshev lifnei Rabbi. Rabbi Yossi himself, when he was alive, was under the rule of Rabbi. Rabbi's the Nasi. And even though Rabbi Yossi was greater than Rabbi, nevertheless, he accepted his piskei halacha. He was under his guidance or his rulership as the Nasi of Eretz Yisrael. And despite being greater than him, he still gave in to Rabbi's positions, whatever Rabbi said. Tosafot does mention, he mentions this in other places, that that was only true when they first started out, that Rabbi was not as great as Rabbi Yossi. But later on in life, Rabbi, because of the number of talmidim that he had, they were mechadadan. They sharpened him, and then he eventually became greater than Rabbi Yossi. But at least in the beginning, Rabbi Yossi sat in front of Rabbi, despite his being greater than Rabbi. Da, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, demalei makom avutav. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, his son, who's filling his father's shoes, filling his father's shoes not simply because he was the inheritor, but because he was as great as his father. Haba, v'kafuf, v'yoshev lifnei Rabbi. And he sat in front of Rabbi, meaning that he had to accept the piskei halacha of Rabbi. And we assumed, just like Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi was that way, so was Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi himself says, Kvar Horez Zakein. He accepts the position of Rabbi Yossi. The fact that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi were in front of Rabbi Kital Midim. Nevertheless, Rabbi, when he heard a Psak Halacha from Rabbi Yossi, says, I accept, and that's it. I bend my will to the position that I heard from Rabbi Yossi. So Amar Lei Rav Nachman Lidaru Abdei. Nachman said to Daru, his servant, Atmin li tzonein. You should do atmana with tzonein, like we just saw in our Mishnah, as well as by Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. V'ayti li mayo da'achim kfila arama. And bring me some water that was heated up by the non-Jewish chef. Shama Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami got wind of it. V'ikpid. And he was upset. He thought that it wasn't correct what Rav Nachman was doing. Some Rav Yosef, my tam ikbad. Why is he upset, Rabbi Ami? Kirevute Avid. He is practicing like his Rebbeim. Chadak Rav, v'chadak Shmuel. One of these, he's following the ruling of Rav, and one of these is following the ruling of Shmuel. Kishmuel, he's following Shmuel, Dam Rav Yudom Shmuel, the beginning of our Gemara today, Mutalat Minet Atzonein. So he paskin like Shmuel, like his Rebbe, and so therefore he said, go ahead, do Hatmana with the Tzonein, just like my Rebbe Shmuel permitted it. And so why, Rabbi Ami, are you getting upset at him? He's following the position of his Rebbe. Kirav, he followed Rav's position, Dam Rav Shmuel, Bar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav, Koshu Nechal Kamot Shuchai, anything that is eaten in its raw state, Ein bo mishum bishulei nachrim. There's no problem with bishul akum there. We have a principle that you may not eat items that were cooked by a non-Jew. What is considered to be cooked by a non-Jew? So first of all, for B'nai Ashkenaz, the Ramah says that a Jew must just do a simple participation in the cooking process in order to remove this isur. There, the Gemara describes it as throwing in a small piece of wood, lighting the fire. Today, we either do it by lighting the pilot light or turning on the flame. Once that is done, that's enough participation, at least for B'nai Ashkenaz, that it's no longer classified as Bishulei Akum. So then the other qualifications, we're not discussing here today, one of them we mentioned, there are two of them, which is that Bishulei Akum only applies to, number one, items that require cooking, that they would not have been eating in their current state. And so first, water. Water is drunk in the cold state, like it is now. You don't have to heat it up in order to eat it. Therefore, if it is heated up, it's not considered to be Bishulei Akum. Very good, exactly. It's a machloket in the Gemara. The Gemara has a machloket about which one is true here. Number one is what's mentioned in our Gemara. The second one is what you just mentioned, Fred, which is, it has to be ro'ui la'alot al mushulchan melachim. Food has to be something of enough stature that it would be served at the king's table. It has to be not something that is just your run-of-the-mill type of food or something that is not appropriate to be put on the king's table, or you could say today the prime minister, the president's table. Again, like is being mentioned here, is that times have changed and many things end up on the president's table that may not have been true in the time when they had kings. But those are the two qualifications. The Gemara brings them as separate opinions. We pask in the kula like Shnehem, that you need both of them to be true in order to be Bishulei Akum. It has to be something that's not eaten in its raw state, and something that also would go on to the Shulchan Melachim in order to be Bishulei Akum. So if you have either one of those items, that is poter you. So for instance, coffee. Making of coffee is something that, even though it's Olea Shulchan Melachim, nevertheless, because the heating process, what's cooked in there, is the heating of the water. That heating of the water is considered to be not problematic because there is no bishul akum kushenecha al shu chai. The question about the coffee itself, are you cooking the coffee? Most coffees are ready, they're roasted or cooked already, and therefore the heating of up or placing them into the hot water is not considered to be bishul again. And because of that, there is generally considered to be no bishul akum when it comes to coffee. Right, so ein bishul acham bishul does apply over here to bishulei akum. The question is, how does the rules of bishulei akum apply to Shabbat? Is it a two-way street? And we do say ein bishul acham bishul generally by bishulei akum, even though that phrase never really appears in Shas. Is a derivative of a Mishnah later on that we're going to get to in the Gemara Shabbat. We quoted it before, I think on Daf Lametet Mem, we quoted that Mishnah. But that there seems to be no bishul acham bishul on Shabbat, and we have the same position when it comes to bishulei akum. The question, we raised this 2 days ago with the apples, is does it go the other way around? Just like here when we're saying that if something can be eaten in its raw state, there is no bishulei akum, do we say the same thing about bishul b'Shabbat? If something can be eaten in its raw state, is there therefore no bishul on Shabbat? Now obviously there is bishul. We're not talking about the question of whether you are mevashel, and if you really want to cook it, and you like it better that way, that's melechet makshevet, and you've done cooking. Question is, if a person's indifferent, or even likes it better raw, if it's cooked then, is that considered to be cooking on Shabbat? From a halachic sense, not from a true sense. Of course, he's cooked it. He's changed the status of the item. He has boiled the apple. Nevertheless, if this person would have been just as happy to eat it raw, is that not considered to be bishul on Shabbat? And that's what we discussed. The Tosafot quoted, and we took most of it, the Chubas of Rav Vaz, as well as the other poskim that discussed this issue as to whether there is bishul akum by raw items that don't necessarily have to be cooked. So in the end, if Rav Nachman is following the positions of his Rebbeim, Rav and Shmuel, why is it that Rabbi Ami got upset at him? My answer is, Rav Nachman is a chashuv an individual. As Rashi phrases it, if people see him, shu mekil, that he does things, but the kula, omeidu mekil yoter, they're going to go even further. So even though mihikar adin, it is correct, but since there are some that are no egister here, and he goes ahead and he's mekil and goes to tzad kula, he's going to set a precedent by which people are going to think that halacha is not so important, or where I need to be, I can be mekil. And therefore he felt that it wasn't appropriate for Rav Nachman to act in this manner. Tarabanan. Even though we said you're not allowed to do atmana with something that is not mosif hevel michashecha, in balosif mosif. If you want to add on, you can't add on. So if you remember back on Daf Lamed Chet, the Gemara discussed the issue of atmana. What are the restrictions of atmana? We said that when it comes to something that is mosif hevel, something that adds heat to the item, that you cannot do even on Erev Shabbat. You can't be matmin mosif hevel. Because our fear was Shema Yakmin Beremetz. Maybe you do the atmana with a coal or something that's hot, and we're afraid Shema Yichate. It's something you'll stoke that, the remetz, those hot coals, and therefore you can't even do it on Erev Shabbat. The Gemara then brought a second restriction, which is that then of course you should be able to do it with the Davar Sheinu Mosif Hevel. The Gemara asks, if it's not Mosif Hevel, then what's the problem? And number two is, if it's not Mosif Hevel, why is it even a problem on Shabbat itself? Why can't you insulate on Shabbat? What's wrong with doing atmana on Shabbat? The Gemara there answered, Shema Yartiyah. Because maybe it'll heat it up. What's going to happen? He's going to come on Shabbat, Friday night, after the sun is set. He's going to go to take the pot to be matmim, to insulate it inside of an area that is not Mosif Hevel. And then he's going to feel that the pot's cold. It's not hot enough. And because of their diligence or their feelings that they need to have that hot dish ready for Shabbat, they're going to come to heat it up. Because they're afraid that it's not going to be ready for the meal. It's not going to be hot enough for the meal. And they're going to heat it up and be mevashel on Shabbat. So we said, therefore, you cannot do atmana on Shabbat itself, even when it's not mosif hevel, because of this problem that the person might come to realization that it's not hot enough, and that'll cause him to heat it up, cook it, put it back on the fire. So the Gemara says over here that afo pi she'emru ein tomnim afilu b'davar she'enu mosif hevel. You know how to do atmana once it's mehashecha, once it's nighttime, mosif. You're allowed to add on to that. You're allowed to increase the insulation. It's Kate said, who said? How do you do this? Rav Shimon Omer, no telet asadinim, umeniach et aguf karim. You can take away the sheets and put on blankets. No telet aguf karim, umeniach et asadinim. You can take away blankets and put on sheets. Obviously, one way makes more sense than the other. Rashi reads this as a continuum. Kate said, who says, explaining the statement before, which is, you're allowed to add on to the atmana on Shabbat. And how do you do that? Here, you can put blankets instead of sheets. That's one continuation. Tosafot says that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is of a different opinion of the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama says you can add. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you can exchange. You can actually change the insulating material. So he says the case that over here is not explaining the previous statement of being mosif. It's explaining the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who says you can even swap out the insulation. You can take out the sheets and put in blankets instead. Suppose the Tanakhama simply says if you have one sheet, you can put on two sheets or three sheets. You can increase the insulation, but may not be able to swap out the insulation. And this is the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that you may not insulate or do atmana with that one pot or urn that was heating up the water. Alpina me mecham the mecham, if you moved it from one pot to the other, from a kli rishon to a kli sheni, mutar. That is allowed. Why? Because hashta kure ka makir lo. Because he is chilling. He is cooling off the item. Artuche ka mitachla. Why would he have any intention to reheat it at that point in time? Remember, our fear again is that he's going to come and be faced with the cold pot for something that's not hot enough, and then he's going to heat it up. He's going to want to cook it. Over here, he had the item in a kli rishon. It was inside of a pot that had sat on the fire. It's no longer on the fire now, but it's hot. It's a pot that can cook if it reaches the Yatzoletipo in a Kli Rishon. Then he pours that into a Kli Sheni. When we pour from a Kli Rishon to Kli Sheni, you know you're cooling off whatever is inside of the Kli Rishon. Remember, Tosafot suggests it has to do with the cold walls of the Kli Sheni, or whether it's the exposure to the air as you pour it over. Whatever the reason is, it's clear that when you move from Kli Rishon to Kli Sheni, you are cooling off whatever was in the Kli Rishon. If that is the case, we're not going to worry then and put an Gzeira in place. Don't do Atmana then with this secondary item because you might come to heat it up. Then don't move it out of the Kli Rishon. If you really wanted it to be hotter, you would never have poured it out of the Kli Rishon into the Kli Sheni. The fact that you've now poured it from Kli Rishon to Kli Sheni already indicates your intention to allow this to cool off. So they're not going to worry about you then heating it up again. If you insulate it now, there is no fear that you will reheat it. Taman, vikisa bedavar hanital b'shavat. This is a tosefta. This tosefta is going to go through the end of this amud and into the next amud, and it's going to involve issues that don't seem connected because it's just quoting a long, very long tosefta over here. So if a person did atmana and covered the pot, bedavar nital b'shavat, something that's not mukse. Oh, taman bedavar she'enu nital b'shavat, or he used for insulation, something that's mukse, v'chisa b'davar nital b'shavat. But he covered it, the top layer of the insulation, he used something that was not mukse, harizeh notelo makzir. There's no problem. It's very easy to gain access to the pot. Either you can lift the pot out, or even if you can't reach the pot, you can move whatever's on top of the pot because it's not mukse. So there, that's very simple, straightforward. The problem comes in the other way around, which is, taman v'chisa b'davar she'enu nital b'shavat. Used for the insulation plus the cover, something that may not be carried on Shabbat, meaning mukse. Oh, shetaman b'davar nital b'shabbat, or he's surrounded or insulated with something that's not carried on Shabbat. V'chisya b'davar she'enu nital b'shabbat. But the cover, the top layer, was something that was mukse. Imaya migule miktzato. If a portion of it is exposed, notelo makzir, then you can take it out and put it back. V'imlav, if it's not the case, eino notelo makzir. He may not take it out and put it back. Question here is, why not? Once you have the mukse item on top, you can't take it out, you can't put it back if it's totally covered. And that's whether it's mukse on top and mukse on the sides or just mukse on top. The problem being that the mukse that you place on top is something that you cannot move, something that you cannot remove. If that's the case, you don't have access to the pot. Because you don't have access to the pot, the question is, with what will you hold the pot? You can't get to the pot without moving the mukse. To move the mukse, that you're not allowed to do on Shabbat. So that's what's precluding you from getting access to the pot. Rashi asks a very simple question. He says, fine, you have mukse on top, but you told me the insulation on the side is not mukse. So all you have to do is enter from the side instead of from the top. Stick your hand down the side and pull out the pot that way instead of going from the top. So Rashi solves the problem with something that's very controversial. He says, you can't do that because the insulation on top that is made out of mukse now made the pot a basis l'davar asur, makes the cover of the pot a base to support or carry something that is a asur. So because of that, you're precluded from moving it even from the side now, because the pot or the cover became a basis l'davar asur, which you may not move on Shabbat, and even a minute side or till 2 minutes side, you can't move it anymore. So you're done. Once it's a basis l'davar asur, you're done. The problem with that is that Rashi just said back on Mem Tet Amud Aleph, by the Mishnah, Rashi said over there, notelata kesui veheno float. You take over the cover, then the insulation falls away by itself. Rashi over there says, it's not a basis l'davar asur. How do I know it's not a basis l'davar asur? Because the lo nasif basis lahen she'in asui l'lechasot al-dera. The cover there is not made to hold up the insulation. It's made to cover the pot. And so therefore it's not functioning as a basis, not functioning as a base or something that's supporting that which is above it, because that's not what it's there for. The cover is there to cover the pot, not to support the insulation above it. So Rashi already clearly said that it's not a basis l'davar asur, and over here he calls it a basis l'davar asur. What you have to answer for Rashi is that the difference here is being migule ketzat or not being migule ketzat. Maybe by the Mishnah there was something exposed from the pot, and over there he says it doesn't become a basis l'davar asur. But over here, where there is no exposure of the pot, this is where it does become a basis l'davar asur. That's what you'll have to say for Rashi. Tosafot says he doesn't understand how Rashi could say it's a basis l'davar asur, and therefore the Ri and the Rabbeinu Tam come up with alternative answers to figure out why when the cover is mukse, you can't get access to the side. One of them is to say that the cover is similar to the covers that they use in restaurants or in fancy settings. For instance, bring out a plate with a tray, and then they have those covers that not only cover the top, but they cover the sides. So that type of cover is what we're speaking about here, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, that the cover not only encapsulates the top, but the sides as well. And because of that, once you have mukse on top of the cover, you can't get access to it from the sides, because the cover itself is now the problem, and you can't get access. That's one possibility. The Ri explains that it's shutaman b'kdera b'kupa b'davar nital. The way that he did it was that the side insulation and the bottom insulation was, for instance, he put into a basket. He placed the pot into a basket, so the side insulation and the bottom insulation are the basket itself. Then he fills the top of the basket with mukse now. That's what creates the top cover, is that mukse area. So he doesn't have access to the side now because it's not something that falls away. The assumption of Rashi is that whatever insulation you're using on the side is something that you could stick your hand into and then pull out the pot. If you're using a kupa, a basket, you're not going to have access. It's something that's solid, you're not going to have access to the side. Tosafot deals with the issue by creating cases where you don't have access to the sides, and that's why the muksa on top is problematic. Rashi says, well, the muksa is on top, you do have access to the sides, so Rashi comes up with a different halachic issue, which is basis ledavar asur. Because now the cover became a basis to the muksa on top, and again, we discussed that that's not so simple, because earlier in the Gemara, we already saw that that's not the case. Rashi already said that it's not a basis ledavar asur, and therefore you have to reconcile that issue for Rashi, which we said maybe makes a difference, whether it's totally covered or only partially covered. Now, the Tosefta continues into what's almost a non sequitur, which is, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ne'orech el pishtan dakari hu kezevel. We already quoted this Tosefta back on Memtet Amud Aleph, where we discuss what the issue is with this ne'orech el pishtan, this very thin residual of the pishtan of the flax. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda says you may not use the thin one, you can only use the gasa, only the thick one. Gemara asks why. The answer of that was that Rabbi Yehuda believes that ne'orech el pishtan are yukah zevel. It's like zevel, which we already know is mosif hevel. So that's why he doesn't allow you to use it. What does this have to do with the previous statement in the Tosefta? Not very much. But it's just a long Tosefta that they're quoting, and therefore there's no connection necessarily between them. Obviously, we're talking about Atmana in both cases, and that's the obvious connection between them. Then, menichem mecham agave mecham ugdera agave kedera. Tosefta continues and says, you may place a mecham on top of a mecham, a gdera on top of a gdera. A pot that's used, or some utensil that's used to heat water, or a gdera, a pot that's used to cook in. So you could put the water or the urn on top of the other urn. You could also place a pot on top of another pot. Now, here saying the Gemara is problematic. Rashi already notes the problem. You can see in the Masorah Tashas, he already says that, that Tosefta doesn't say what our Gemara says, and therefore they rework the next statement, which is, you're allowed to also put a gdera al gabe mecham. You can put a pot on top of the urn, that is allowed. Avalo mecham al gabe gdera. The only thing you're not allowed to do is put a mecham, which is the water urn, on top of the gdera, on top of the pot. The assumption being here that the gdera gets much hotter. Gdera can reach a much higher heat than the mecham can reach. So therefore, if you're within the same status quo, which is, if you put a mecham on top of a mecham, you haven't now put it onto something that is quote-unquote mosif hevel. That's something that's going to add to the heating here. You're taking two items that are of the same heat level, technically, or can reach the same heat level. Therefore, if you put one on top of the other, it's fine. Same thing with gdera gabe gdera. You put a pot on top of a pot. They both reach that higher level of heat, and that's fine. So too, if you put the gdera on top of the mecham. If you place the hot pot on top of the urn, on top of the cooler one, that's also not a problem about tumana. The only problem in time you can have an issue is when you put it on the bottom. The gdera is on the bottom, which is a hotter item, and then you put the mecham on top of it, which does not reach that same heat level. So now you basically put a heat source underneath, and that's going to be a problem of hatmana coming into Shabbat. Now this is mentioned twice in the Shulchan Aruch. It's mentioned in Reish Nunchet. Reish Nunchet addresses this issue and what seems to be the topic of the Tosefta, which is a problem of Atmana. If you then put dough around it or you lock it in place, putting the hotter item on the bottom is problematic in terms of Atmana. The other place it's brought up is in Shin Yud Chet. Shin Yud Chet is the Siman in Shulchan Aruch with regards to Bishul. And this is more famously known for the other part of the Aloha where it's relevant, which is Gedera al gabe gedera, which is how we can do chazara on Shabbat. You're allowed to return an item to the fire on Shabbat as long as it's gedera al gabe gedera. There are numerous problems that come up with terms of cooking on Shabbat. The ones that are daraita, we almost never bump into because most of our cooking is done before Shabbat. Then if it's gemachal bedrusai already, we go into Shabbat. We assume that's all fine. Most of that is not the issues of cooking on Shabbat. Most of the issues that we run into are issues dirabanan. Issues dirabanan shihiyah, which we already discussed extensively, which is leaving something on the fire going into Shabbat. There we said it has to be goruf katum. It has to be either cleared out or ashes poured on it. Today, the modern day idea is the blech that's on the fire. You have to do something that, according to Rashi, cools down the fire. According to the Ran, is a heker, so that you will not come to stoke the coals, not come to raise the flame going into Shabbat. So that's the requirements for Shi'iyah, leaving something on the fire on Shabbat. There's an additional issue on Shabbat itself, at least for Bnei Ashkenaz, which is that on to Shabbat itself, to return something to the fire, we worry about something called Mechsek Bishul. Looks like you're cooking on Shabbat. Now, if the item was hot, you took it off the blech, as long as you follow the requirements that the Gemara lays out about how exactly you hold this pot, then you may return it to the fire in the exact same position it was before. You can put it right onto the blech, no problem. So for instance, if you take an item off the fire and you hold it in your hand the whole time, you serve something out of it, you can replace it as long as the liquid remains hot. If it's a solid any way you like, you can put it back onto the blech itself. Because then it's basically a continuation of the original Shia. Problem comes, for instance, if you have something in the refrigerator. You have chicken, you have a kugel that's in the refrigerator, a solid item, which ain't bishul achar bishul. You want to place it onto the blech on Shabbat. There, for at least for Bnei Ashkenaz, we say it's mechsek bishul. It looks like you're taking a cold item, putting it onto a heat source, and cooking it on Shabbat. Yes, you know that it was already cooked. But that, to an outsider, that's not necessarily true. They don't know that you cooked it beforehand. They don't know that this is already mevushal. So it looks like you're cooking on Shabbat. So you have to do an additional item, which is a heker. An additional item that indicates that you're not cooking on Shabbat. So it's mo mechsek bishul. So one of the suggestions is kedera al gabe kedera. If you place one pot on top of the other pot, that's not the normal way to cook. Since that's not the normal way to cook, then together with ein bishul achar bishul, even if it reaches the atzeletipo, people will know you're not cooking because nobody cooks this way. So by putting it on top of the other pot, it shows or it's an indication that you're not intending to cook. Yes, the item is cooked already. Had it not been cooked and it reaches the atzeletipo, you would have had a problem. But the whole way that you're doing it already demonstrates that that's not your intent because you wouldn't have cooked in this way. There are kulot with this. We don't necessarily pass in this way the halacha, but makom hatzorech, you can use them. For instance, items that are not usually cooked on top of a stovetop, items that are baked in an oven, kugels, bread that is baked inside of an oven, when you put it on top of the blech, that's not derech bishulo. That's not the normal way to heat these items up. It might be then that it's sufficient to put them directly on the blech without any gdera gabe gdera because that's not the normal way to cook such items. That dispensation, again, is not accepted by all. It's a kula that we don't necessarily rely on. We much prefer that you do it kedera, agave, kedera, even with items that are not normally cooked in this way. But again, b'makom hatzorech, when there's a great need or there's some other issue, you may place it back onto the black directly if it's an item that's not normally cooked in that way. Cousin Ish does have an unusual position with regards to blechs, and he says, even though we believe that we don't normally cook on a blech, and already that's enough of a heker to show when you're coming up to Shabbat to leave things on the blech, unless the Chazon Ish says that a blech is equivalent of a griddle. People do cook on a griddle. You go into the local deli, put it onto the hot griddle. A blech is no different than a hot griddle. You could cook an egg right on that griddle. So the Chazon Ish says that I don't think it's really accepted so much the halacha, but the Chazon Ish does suggest that maybe there's a problem with blechs that's not really a hakeira, because you're creating an item that's a normal manner to cook with, which is a griddle. How does a griddle work? It has the elements underneath it. It has a fire underneath it. And it's a hot, flat metal surface. That's what you've created.
The difference in a griddle, you have pots on a griddle. Again, that same idea.
Correct, correct. Right, you could differentiate and say that you're still not utilizing it the way that people use a griddle, which is put food directly on it. But in general, I don't think the Chazon Ish has accepted mostly the halacha, which is I think most people do use blechs on Shabbat, going into Shabbat, and consider that to be sufficient. Right, so that's a good question. With regards to platas, which has become, especially in Israel, is much more popular, it does solve one of your problems, which is generally platas don't have ability to change the heat level. Since they don't have an ability to change the heat level, you don't have a problem of Shema Yichateh. There's no issue of Shema Yichateh at the Gichalim because you can't change the heating. If you can't change the heating, then there's no problem with Shia, and then you should be able to leave it directly on the plata going into Shabbat. The plata becomes its own blech in that sense because you can't change it. The question of whether it's considered to be an ish kisui, is it a covered flame? So most people believe that a plata is a covered flame because the flame, the elements are found inside the blech. I've heard Rav Schechter argue, and others argue, that the elements inside of it are not considered to be kisuim because that's the way they're made. They're not made another way. That's the way the plata is made. You don't say something's covered because that's the way that it heats. That's the way it works. That's the way it functions. And so therefore, they want to argue that that's not considered to be a mechuse, and therefore you have to put another layer, you have to put tinfoil on it, you have to put something else on top of it because of that problem. The same will be true with a crock pot. You might have that same issue, which is the crock pot considered to be mechuse? So considered to be covered because, again, the elements are covered at the base of the crock pot. Is that considered to be covered enough for shi'iyah? Or do you have to do something else? Do you have to line it with tinfoil, put something underneath? Some people make a ball of tinfoil, throw it in. Our practice, or what I ask my wife to do, is to take the dial off the crock pot. The dial, the plastic dial, it changes it from off, low, and high. Right. You can't change with that. If you remove it before every Shabbat, she takes it off the crock pot, and therefore you don't have a problem anymore of Shema Yichateh B'Gichalim, and it's also a siman. Yeah, you put tinfoil on top of it. You have to be careful because then sometimes it conducts the heat and it melts the knob. But you should know that there are those that are very makpid to put in, either line it with tinfoil or put a tinfoil ball on the bottom with cards to crock pots and with platot.
We have an issue of platot, yes.
Yeah, so Yad Zeledet is not an issue, we know that, because if you only put something on the fire on Shabbat, that it was already mevushal. The fact that it reaches Yad Zeledet bow is not an issue, because there's no bishul. If you're remevashal, it doesn't matter how you do it. If you put something that could be cooked on the plata on Shabbat, and it cooks, you're paying for bishul on Shabbat. That's not a question. You take out a cold liquid and you put it onto the plata. If it reaches the atzeleta bowl, you've cooked on Shabbat. The issue of reaching the atzeleta bowl is not relevant. The issue is whether you can change the temperature and whether it's mechzek bishul, if it's like you're cooking. Those are the main issues. The atzeleta bowl is not an issue. The only time the atzeleta bowl comes up is what we discussed between Rashi and Tosafot, which is, for instance, you want to put a liquid that's cold on the plata. If you can find a place in the plata that will never reach Yad Zeledet bow, we pass on that that's allowed. You can heat up something on location that will never reach Yad Zeledet bow. Rashi says you can put it on and take it off before it reaches Yad Zeledet bow. We don't pass in that way. Tosafot argues on that and says no, only if it's in a location that will never reach Yad Zeledet bow. If you can find a place in the plata that doesn't reach Yad Zeledet bow, you could put liquids, you could put items that are not allowed to be mevushal on Shabbat, you can't place them there on the plata. Right, so that's a big question in the poskim, is how much liquid is considered to be a liquid item versus a solid item. That the poskim discuss what that threshold is, how liquidy does it have to be in order to be classified as a liquid instead of a solid, which has a big nafkamina in ein bishul achar bishul, which all the rishonim agree by solid item. There's no bishul achar bishul, happens to be machlok rishonim, but there's bishul achar bishul by liquids. We happen to be choshesh, a poskim like those that say there is bishul achar bishul by liquids, and therefore you have to be careful about that threshold between solids and liquids. You're allowed to attach the two pots together with dough, not so that they should get hotter, because that it should stay in place, that it should hold the heat and should stay in place. That is allowed. Just like you're not allowed to do hatmana by hot items, you're not allowed to do hatmana by cold items. Now we have Rabbi, hitir latmina tzonein. Rabbi says it's mutar. Again, Rabbi says this after he heard it from Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi and changed his mind. So he does say that you're allowed to do tzonein, which is the way we pass an halacha, that is, you can do hatmana with tzonein. Then, an important halacha now, ve'ein marzikin lo et ha-sheleg ve'lo et ha-barad. One may not crush ice or snow on Shabbat. It's interesting, Rashi over here translates barad as glatsia, probably from the word glacier, ice or snow. Shmuel shi zovu meimav, in order to make them into a liquid. But you can put it into a cup, or into a bowl, and not worry about it. Here there is a three-way machloket rishonim as to what the issue is. Rashi says that when you yizovu meimav, peshuv dekam molid b'shabbat, creating something new on Shabbat. V'domei l'malacha. It looks similar to malacha, sheborei amayim ha'ilu, he's creating this water. So Rashi says it's a mechzek molid. There's a restriction on Shabbat about creating something new. It can't be molit. Something that is, comes into existence or into accessibility on Shabbat is a problem of nolad. It's a problem of muksa, of nolad on Shabbat. Rashi says over here, it looks like you're nolad. Everybody knows that the reason that ice or snow turns into water is because it melts. When it melts, it's really the same item. It's just changed its form. So therefore, as Rashi says, it's not really molit. But it looks like you're changing. It looks like you're taking something and changing its form. So because of that, it's not allowed to be done on Shabbat. On the other hand, what's clear from Rashi is if you leave the ice in a cup, or you leave the ice in a bowl, and it melts by itself, that would be fine on Shabbat. That'd be totally okay, because Rashi says it's mechzek molid. Over here, you're not doing anything. It's happening by itself, and therefore it'll be fine on Shabbat. You're not actively changing the status of this item. On the other hand, the Ritzvah and the Rashba quote other possibilities. The Rashba himself says the problem here is schita. It looks like you're sochet the item. It looks like you're squeezing the item to take out the liquid from it. So when you're squeezing an item to take out the liquid from it, it looks like a problem of schita. People are going to think, just like you can squeeze ice or snow to get liquid, you can squeeze a fruit to get its liquid out. Therefore, he says, you may not do it on Shabbat, but the dispensation of the Rashba is, if you crush the snow inside of another liquid, if you crush the ice inside of another liquid, it'll be fine. Because over there, you can't see that the liquid is emanating from the item. You can't see that there's schita being done. So over there, the cheshash falls away. So that's the one heter of the Rashba. The Rashba says that if you crush it inside of a liquid, then you are fine. The other position is that of the Ritva. The position of the Ritva is, it's not looking like molid. It is molid on Shabbat. You actually are creating something new on Shabbat. And therefore, the Ritva says that one may not crush ice or snow on Shabbat, but if it is placed into another liquid, you're okay. Because that's not looks like molded on Shabbat. So you can put ice into a drink and let the ice melt by itself. If you put it into a liquid, that's fine. Yeah, you could might be able to put it in the hot water. Yes, depending on how hot it is. You have to be careful of how hot it is. That's the same question, putting cold water into hot water in general. Can't cook water in a klisheni. So it's a klisheni, you can put the ice into it directly. Rishon, it's below Yadzaletipo, then you can put ice into it. Alright, so there you have three opinions in the Rishonim as to what the issue here is. Rashi's Mechzik Molid. Ritva says it's Molid Mamash. The Rashba says it's the problem of Schita. All of these can be solved some ways in first instance if you place it into a cup of water that exists already. That can solve your problem, according to most. You can crush it, according to the Rashba, inside of water, and you won't have a problem. So we are makil in general with regards to some of these issues because of these dispensations that you have by ice. Right? We begin the next parak here, which is, what is an animal allowed to go out with on Shabbat and not allowed to go out with on Shabbat? Now, the restriction for an animal to go out with something on Shabbat comes from a pasuk that says, l'mani yanuach. That your animals have to rest on Shabbat. There's a demand that your animals rest on Shabbat. Your animals may not go or walk around with anything that's called a masuis, anything that's called a burden. They can't carry or work on Shabbat. It doesn't come from the pasuk that says, Lo tasekum alacha, tavin chavitecha, avdecha matchum decha. Over there, that bam techa, the only malacha there is not to be mechamer, is not to drive your animal. That's not talking about carrying it. L'man Yanuach says you may not put an item on an animal. How do you know if something is considered to be a masui or not a masui? How do you know if it's a burden for the animal? Or it's simply the normal part of the animal's wear? So the answer is, if it's something that an animal normally wears, and it would be considered a part of its quote-unquote clothing, that is permitted on Shabbat, that's not considered to be a burden, and the animal can have that on Shabbat. On the other hand, if it's an item that an animal does not normally wear, or it's excessive on the animal, that's considered to be a masui and it's not allowed on Shabbat. So for instance, you can say right away, anything that is decorative on the animal, that is a masui on Shabbat, you can't place on the Shabbat. That's not something that's necessary for the normal guarding of the animal. It's not something that the animal has to wear. It's something that's optional, and if you place it on the animal, it's a masui. It's an extra burden for the animal, and you may not do that on Shabbat. So that's what the Mishnah is discussing over here. So now it says, what is it allowed to go out with? You'd say gamal bafsar. A gamal, a camel can go out with, an afsar is a halter, or today it means, afsar means reins, with its reins. Vinaka, naka is a female camel who is a little more mischievous than the male counterpart, therefore it goes out with chotem. Chotem is a nose ring that you put on it, then you tie the nose ring down to keep it calm. Vilubdikim, lubdikim are these wilder donkeys. Beprumbia, it goes out with its bit. Besus, and a horse goes out beshir. Shir is a collar that has some sort of leash on it. So these are the normal items that these animals wear that are used to control them, to keep them domesticated. And therefore they're allowed to go out with them on Shabbat because that's considered to be normal and normal for that animal. B'chol balei ashir, anything that wears a collar and a leash, yotzim beshir, you can go out with their collar. Nimshachim beshir, and you can pull them with their leash. Even though you're not allowed to carry on Shabbat, you can take the leash and pull the animal, because you're not carrying the leash, you're moving the animal, you're trying to move the animal along. And if you have to, if they become tameh, the collar becomes tameh, if it's made out of metal, you can do the hazah of the paraduma on it, and you can put it into the mikveh without taking it off the animal. You can leave the collar on the animal, dip it into the mikveh. You can sprinkle the paraduma onto the collar, even without taking it off the animal. It's considered to be loose enough around the neck that you can do it without removing it from the animal. Gemara says, what does it mean, a female camel with a nose ring? Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chano, nakto chivarte, it's a white female camel, bizamama de parzala, with a metallic nose ring. That's what's considered to be normal for this type of camel. This type of camel is considered to be extra wild. Therefore, it needs a higher level of domestication or protection to stop it from doing what's wrong. And nose ring is the proper way to do that, and that's why it's not considered to be carrying on Shabbat. Lubdukim beprumbia. Amar Rav Huna, what's these lubdukim beprumbia? It's chamra luba. It's a donkey, a Libyan donkey or a Lubian donkey. Tosafot over here quotes from Reino Tam, who says luba is Mitzrayim, an Egyptian donkey. Bepage de parzula, with a metallic bit. So that's what he's allowed to go out. That's what's considered to be normal for these animals. Levi shadar zuze de bechozai. Levi sent money to this location, bechozai, where they used to breed chamra lubtakaya, these donkeys, these very strong donkeys. Mizben le chamra luba. You wanted to buy this, whether it's a Lubian, Libyan, or Egyptian donkey. Saru shadru le sare. They sent his money back with, and in it, they enclosed barley seeds into it. Lameimar, to hint to him, the nigre de chamra sare. What strengthens the donkey is feeding it a lot of barley. They said, not worth it for you to buy it over here. It's too far away. You're traveling for 6 months. That 6 months travel, it's not worth buying the donkey. By the time it gets to you, it's going to be weakened. It's not going to be in this condition that you want it. They sent back to him and says, don't bother buying here. Just do it on your own. Take your donkey and feed it a lot of barley, and it'll be strong and it'll do what you want it to do. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Machlifim Lifnei Rabbi Shalzu Bezu. We used to change around the animals and their utensils in front of Rabbi, meaning in our Mishnah. We used to say a gamal with a chotem, a naka with a afsar. We used to switch around and ask him what the halacha was. Mao, what's the din? Naka b'afsar, female camel with a halter, loti b'ayla. That you shouldn't have any question about. Kevin delo mintra b'masuyu. It does nothing for it. It's not sufficient to guard it, to keep it domesticated. Therefore, it's clearly a burden on it. And you cannot let it go out. The reason that a naka needs a chotem is because an afsar would not suffice. So if an afsar doesn't suffice, putting on it is meaningless. Because if you put the afsar on, you've done nothing for it, and it's simply carrying it around. Kita b'ayla gamal v'chotem. What about a camel with a nose ring? My, given the sagilei b'afsar, since it would be sufficient for it to use a halter or reins, masuyu, since you're doing more than necessary, that's considered to be a masuyu. Oh, dilma nitiruta yeterta lo amrina masuyu. Maybe making something even better, stronger protection, that is not considered to be a burden. If you do more than necessary, that's not a problem. So in instance, if a dog on a leash would be enough, and you put a muzzle on the dog, is that considered to be caring? You've done something more than necessary, but it's still protective, it still works. So if it's functional in that way, maybe that's okay. So that's the Gemara's question of what it's posing over here. So Amar lefanav Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, again, Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi says in front of Rabbi, Kach amar Abba, this is what my father said, Rabbi Yossi, Arba be'imot yotzot b'afsar. Four animals go out with a halter, with reins, a sus, a horse, v'apered, and a mule, v'agamal, and a camel, v'achamor, and a donkey. Le'mute mai. Why do you need to know that these four animals go out with a halter? Lav le'mute gamal b'chotem. Is it coming to teach you that a gamal could only go out with reins or a halter? Not with a chotem, a nose ring. Lo, the mute naka b'afsar. It comes to exclude a case of the female camel. She can't go out with an afsar because it's not sufficient. So no, me medayek from that an answer. We have a bright that says, luftikin v'gamal yotzim b'afsar. These luftikaya, these lubidikin donkeys, and the gamal go out with an afsar, with reins. So the question of how you learn from this, the question of the Gemara. Rashi says the question of the Gemara is that if it is sufficient for the lubdikian donkey, then it's certainly more than enough for the gamal. We saw in our Mishnah in terms of hierarchy that the lubdikim need prumbia, they need a bit. It's not enough to have a halter on them. So if this halter that you're using is sufficient for these donkeys, then it's more than enough for the gamal. So you see from that it is mutar to put on this extra protection. On the other hand, the Rif and the Rosh think that the fact that it says gamal yotzim v'afsar, that the gamal can go out with an afsar, that's what the Gemara is being medayek from over here. Kitnai, the Gemara says it is a machloket tanaim. Ein chaya yotza b'soger. A chaya, a wilder animal, may not go out with a soger. A soger is a muzzle. But Rashi says over here a collar. Chanan yomer yotza b'soger. You can go out with a muzzle. Chol davar mishtamer, anything else that guards it. B'maya skinan. What's the case here in this braita? Ilema b'chaya dola. We're talking about a large wild animal, like a bear or a lion. Misagala soger. Who would even put a muzzle? Muzzle's not enough. You need something very strong. So that can't be what we're talking about. El b'chaya ktana. Talking about a small wild animal. Misalagi sagila soger. Why isn't a soger enough? Why isn't it considered to be a muzzle would be sufficient, more than enough? It'd be overkill. So el alav chatul. Talking about a cat. Ika benayu. Tana kama savar came into sagile b'mitna. Could have used a simple cord. That would have been sufficient over here. Therefore, masuyu, therefore putting on a muzzle is excessive. And that's what the Tanakhama says, that's a masuyu. V'chananya ksavar, kol nitiruta yeterta lo amrinim masuyu. Anything that is extra protection, we don't say it's considered to be a burden. Yes, you could have gotten away with less, but if you do more, that's not a burden. That's okay, that's fine. So it's a machloket tanaim we see here about whether when you put on extra protection, extra that is not necessary, is that considered to be a burden or not. Levi breid Rav Huna barchia. So Levi was going along with Rabba Bar Rav Huna, and Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Abakazle Boruchak, they went on the way. Kadmei Chamra de Levi, the Chamra de Rabba Bar Rav Huna. The donkey of Levi went ahead. They were riding their donkeys, and his donkey went ahead of that of Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Chalash Dati de Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Rabba Bar Rav Huna became upset by that. He thought it was a b'gia on his kavod. He was the greater of the two of them. He was the older of the two of them. Therefore, he felt that he should have been let to go first, because it's not kavod to let Levi pass him or have Levi go by. So he thought Levi intentionally passed him, and he thought that was inappropriate. So Levi wanted to indicate to Rabbi Varahuna that it wasn't him who did it, that the donkey was a little bit wild, and he couldn't control it, and that's why he went ahead. So Amar Emele Miltuk, Eichete Itotav Date. Let me say something to him. Let me ask him a question, so that he'll feel better about it. Amalei, Kamor Shatsakav Raim. You have a donkey who is not so controllable. He's a little bit wild. Kagonzeh, like my donkey. Maho, Latse Peprumbia Bishabbat. Can he go out with a bit on Shabbat? So Amalei, Hachi Amar Avuch. This is what your father said. Mishmei Dishmuel. That's Amar Avun Amar Shmuel. Halocha Kechananyo. The halacha is like Hananya. The halacha is like Hananya. Hananya said that if you have excessive protection or more than that's necessary, that's fine. So it would have been fine to put a bit on your donkey. But what he was trying to say to him is, my donkey's wild, and that's why I went ahead of you. He was trying to placate him. And in asking the question, he indicated to him the problem that had happened and say that he didn't do it intentionally. So Rabbi Ravuna would not feel bad about the fact that Levi had passed him. We had in the Gemara in Bracha, back on Daf Mem Zayin, a similar story. And over there, when they reached the doorway, then he gave kavod and let the elder go through, or the one who was older go through. So he said to him, what do you mean? Until now there was no kavod. You went ahead of me the whole way, and now you're letting me go first? Gemara there says, or he answers that, there's only kavod be petach arui lemezuzah. The only time there's kavod is where you're not in an open situation. You're not in an area where it's not clear who's first, who's second, where you're going. Then there's no idea of kavod. The only time there's a kavod is when you have a doorway that's narrow, and then you have to give someone the first right. That's where kavod is necessary and noticeable. So therefore, on the drachim, ein mechavdim, we don't do kavod on drachim. Well, then what's the problem here in our Gemara? So Tosva differentiates that if they are going together, if they are traveling together to the same destination they started out together, then there is kavod bidrachim. Then you have to give kavod to one another because you're traveling together. And then as a party, you have to let the one who is deserving of kavod go first. If you happen to have met together, or you happen to be traveling together, but you didn't necessarily leave together, you're not going to the same destination, it's just happenstance that you both are traveling the same way or end up in the same transportation, over there there's no din of kavod. Because you're really not considered to be a single party or a single entity. And there's only kavod if you're going through a doorway, or if you're going through something that would indicate clear definition of kavod. As far as the halacha here, we say the halacha is kechananya, and Tosfot says over here, Perish Rabbeinu Chananya, the halacha kerav, that the halacha is not like Chananya, but rather the halacha is like Rav, Damar ben Lenoy, ben Lishamer Asur, Medishani Abai Varava, Varavina, Davi Batrai Alibay. So therefore, if we pass in the halacha like Rav, and the halacha is like Rav Bisure, therefore anything that's extra protection on an animal would be considered to be a masoi carrying on Shabbat, and it would be a violation of letting one's animal rest on Shabbat. So that's the way the Balei HaTosfot pass over here, as opposed to others who believe that the halacha is Kechananya. Okay, we'll stop over here.